We've talked about this quite a bit this morning, and I love that the same themes keep coming up, that defining animal welfare has been quite a challenge for zoo professionals for many years, but even more challenging is finding quantitative methods to assess the welfare of the individuals within our animal collections. And numerous studies have focused on elements of animal welfare, but we're now really beginning to understand the need for multifaceted evaluations that include health indicators, affective states that include both pain and distress, and the ability of animals to live more naturalistic lives and perform species-typical behaviors. And the examination of overall welfare, we know, should be based on multiple factors or input measures, and really should include a holistic approach that looks at behavioral and physiological indices, each with its own sliding scale that ranges from poor to good, rather than just focusing on any single welfare indicator. Then we know that a single welfare measure alone won't necessarily provide a clear assessment of an animal's welfare. And in fact, a focus on only one of these factors may lead to decreased welfare due to neglect of other animal needs. There are a lot of definitions of animal welfare out there, and just a simple one from Broom is the animal's ability to cope with its environment. And I'd like to suggest that we change that a little bit to an animal's ability to thrive within its environment. We know that welfare is a condition of the animal. It ranges from good to poor at any given time. But a lot of studies have focused on just negative effects of or indicators of welfare. And positive effect has been shown to improve welfare in human subjects, which indicates an inverse relationship between happiness and stress, which leads us really to wonder, does a happy animal mean a healthy animal? What we are kind of struggling with at the Toledo Zoo is taking all of this information and trying to figure out how do we distill it down to something that's manageable, that we can evaluate within a reasonable amount of time, and get that information back to our animal care staff so they can utilize it to continue to improve animal welfare. So we started looking a couple years ago. We opened a new children's zoo called Nature's Neighborhood, opened in 2009. And it's a very interactive exhibit. And the theme for this exhibit is come out and play. We want to get kids unplugged and connect them to nature. And we have four major goals in that exhibit, really connecting kids with nature and to really inspire them to want to care for the natural world. And we know from previous research that children that have early experiences with nature or the natural world are more prone to take an act in conservation later on. With that, because it's a children's zoo, we wanted to encourage a lot of learning through play. There are very few graphics in that exhibit, but a lot of opportunities for them to play both formally and informally through programming. And then finally, we wanted to look at proper pet ownership, starting with the appropriate selection of pets and then how to care for your pet throughout its life. Just highlights of Nature's Neighborhood, or as we like to say, the hood. It's very interactive. There are a number of activities for kids to play or to participate in, from just running around the backyard of the house that's there to programmed activities within a workshop. There are elements of play where they can use their imagination and come up with their own games. There's also opportunities for them to mimic animals. For example, we have a goat petting yard with a climbing wall, and the kids have a similar climbing wall so they can know what it's like to be a goat. Lots of learning opportunities through computer programs, and I know I say we want to get them unplugged and then we plug them in, but there are opportunities for them to choose appropriate pet choices and things like that. We have a freshwater stream where they can use their imagination and play games. They can also try to dam up the stream with rocks and tools and things like that. But even with all of this interaction in this exhibit, the number one thing that the kids liked is touching and seeing animals. What we were looking at is trying to determine, in this new exhibit, did animal welfare differ? Not was it better or worse, but does it differ coming from the off-exhibit areas where these animals were currently living, going into a new exhibit? And we were looking at that because we know that there are a number of different factors, and some of the previous talks have mentioned that. Most of these animals had been education outreach animals. They lived in off-exhibit areas, probably a little bit smaller than the average exhibit enclosure. They were often taken off grounds for education programs, taken to schools, presented in front of large crowds, and then brought back to their off-exhibit holding area. In the new exhibit, they have larger areas, more opportunities for natural living, probably different enrichment. They're exposed to different crowds, different environmental stimuli, and we wanted to see how this differed for the animals. We also wanted to find a method that we could apply to a broader use within the zoo. Can we find something that we can do within a reasonable amount of time that is applicable to a broader representation of species? So our study subjects were most of the animals that lived in nature's neighborhood. We have four domestic cats. Two came from the local humane society. Two were strays. And a white cockatoo that was donated from a family that could no longer care for him. He came in at a fairly young age. We had two cockatiels that were brought in specifically for this exhibit, and seven pygmy goats that lived in our previous children's zoo and were moved over to the new exhibit. And just for the purposes of time, I'm only going to talk about the cats and the cockatoo today, although the results that we found for the other two species were fairly similar here. Trying to figure out how to take a holistic approach, we looked at environmental, physical, and behavior measures for all of these animals. And from the environmental standpoint, we figured probably the most significant change for these animals would be the noise levels and the introduction of visitors to their environment, so we looked at that. The physical measures included weekly weight measurements of all of the animals, and then we also asked the keepers to keep a log of fecal consistency, whether it was normal or abnormal, and if it was abnormal, we asked for them to describe that. That's really fun. Body condition scoring. For the cats, we adopted a body condition score from Purina. For the goats, we used the African Pygmy Goat Association's scoring system. And then for the two species of birds, we adapted body condition scores or templates from other similar species. And that was recorded on a weekly basis. We looked at feather and coat condition on a weekly basis as well. And just for the cats, we looked at, we did a Turgor test every day just to make sure they were going from their off-exhibit enclosure to the exhibit every day and then back home at night. We wanted to make sure that they weren't dehydrating. Behaviorally, we, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, I apologize. We looked at activity budgets of all of the animals using focal animal data and some all-occurrence sampling. And we made sure that with our ethograms, we included both positive and negative indicators of welfare. We collected data in four phases. The baseline data collection occurred 2 to 4 weeks before the opening of the exhibit. And we did that in part because we wanted to keep the season the same and not have a temperature or climate effect. We had enough variables as it was. And then we gave the animals a little bit of time to adjust to the new surroundings, and we collected similar data 1 month, 3 months, and 5 months after the exhibit opened so we could see if they were acclimating, if there was an acclimation period, and if so, how long that lasted. For the cats, let's see. Does this work? It's the red one? It's off. Please hold. There we go. Okay, thank you. Okay, there we go. This is the cat's off-exhibit enclosure. They have a nice window they can look out and scratching posts and enrichment. We also set up a schedule with some of our staff and volunteers, a cat cuddling schedule, so they would get human attention. As we're talking about pet ownership, we wanted to make sure those cats had the ability to interact with people if they wanted to. Then the exhibit includes, this is our Ohio home, and it was almost basically a cabinet type exhibit where they have shelves, they've got some enrichment, there are hide boxes in there for them, litter boxes and food and water. And from the exhibit, they have an opening at the top that the keepers can open and allow them onto a catwalk that goes almost entirely around the exhibit room. So they have the opportunity to get out, interact with people, look around, explore, they can see outside. And they were given opportunities throughout the day to get up onto the catwalk, and usually they would decide within an hour or so to go back into their exhibit. And then we also brought them out for programming throughout the day, so they would have exposure to people. What we found when we analyzed their results is with all four cats, we didn't see really any difference in most of the physical measures. Their fecal consistency remained normal throughout the course of the study. Their coat condition, turgor, all within the normal ranges, and didn't see any significant changes. One cat was put on a study or put on a diet during the study because he was overweight, and he ended up losing about 14% of his body weight. So his body condition improved, but it was because of human intervention. For the other cats, their body condition didn't change, and their weight didn't fluctuate, or fluctuated less than 5%. When we looked at the behavioral measures, what we found is that their baseline behavior in the education center showed that they were resting most of the time, but they did spend quite a bit of time alert, still pretty inactive, but alert, looking out the window, watching squirrels, or they would be interested in what was going on within the building. After we moved them to the exhibit, we saw that resting behavior increase significantly, and both the alert behaviors and the resting behaviors were statistically significant. What was interesting on exhibit, though, is their resting patterns were very different than the resting patterns in the off-exhibit enclosure, that they would actually spend that first month resting with their backs to the public. And we hadn't seen that before. We also saw an increase in grooming behavior, and it wasn't statistically significant, but we think there's a biological significance here, that it may have been a coping mechanism, that the cats did so that there was a little bit of stress that first month, but as you can see, that went down within by the third month. So they did appear to acclimate to that new environment. By the end of the study, we did see them eating a little bit more while they were on the exhibit. And this graph just represents one cat, but all four cats did show similar behavioral trends. We did analyze them individually because we wanted to look at the individual welfare. But when we looked at them all together, we did see a significant difference between the baseline and the month one data especially, but consistent among all cats, there really wasn't a difference between the first month and then the third and the fifth months. So it showed us that they did go through an acclimation period, but by the third month of being in that exhibit, they had actually acclimated. When we looked at noise and crowd, we also saw some significance there, and these may be correlated, but as noise level increased within the exhibit, we saw an increase in resting. And can you see the numbers down there? The first part of the graph is 30 to 50 decibels, which is pretty quiet, and all the way on the right is 80 decibels. And at 86 decibels, that's pretty loud, and that would affect human hearing. It's very rare that we saw noise levels get that high, but as the noise increased, they started resting more, and they were obviously less alert during those time periods. And then we saw similar trends as the crowd levels increased. And with the crowd, we realize we're probably getting an increase in noise, so there's probably a correlation there. But they did initially rest more as the crowds increased. But by the end of the study, and what we see today, is the cats are actually engaging and interacting with the public. They're facing the public. When they're on the catwalk, they actually interact with the public. So that they've seemed to have gone through an acclimation phase as well. With the cockatoo, his off-exhibit enclosure, was a typical parrot cage, and he was moved to a large enclosure, much taller, a lot more opportunities for enrichment, opportunities to interact with the public. And we saw similar results with him. The physical measures with him didn't change at all throughout the study. Everything remained normal. His body weight really didn't change much throughout the study. But when we looked at his behavior, we saw similar trends as we did with the cats. He spent a lot of time, or a good bit of time, off exhibit investigating the area around him. He would kind of move around the cage, locomote. He spent some time resting, but not a lot. We did see some stereotypic behavior with him, a backflip where he would just kind of walk through his cage and just kind of do backward somersaults. But when we put him on exhibit, that stereotypic behavior disappeared. But what did increase was resting again. And the self-directed or self-grooming behaviors, those for the first month. So again, we think we're seeing an acclimation period, that there may have been an acclimation period where he wasn't quite comfortable, wasn't quite used to his surroundings, and it did take a little bit of time for him to kind of engage. What we did see, though, is he did show an interest of people. And again, not statistically significant, but from biological or behavioral standpoint, what we're seeing is now he's choosing to interact with the public. And when we go in to get him out for interaction with our staff, there are times that he actually refuses to come out because he's interacting with the public. We saw similar results with him. As the crowd level increased, he tended to rest a little bit more early on. But we also saw the interest in people increasing. So it's hard to say whether how much of an effect the crowd level has on him. Just because there was a large crowd in the area didn't mean that they were necessarily up in his area interacting with him. They could have been anywhere in that room. With noise, similar to the cats, we did see an increase in self-directed behavior, that grooming behavior. So again, it may be a coping mechanism adjusting to that that new exhibit. With all of these, we saw a decrease in locomotion, and probably because we did see the increase in resting, that those are not dependent variables or measures right there. So basically what we learned from this is we did see significant responses to increase in noise and crowds, and we did see a significant change in behavior during that first month on exhibit. So we really do think that there was some coping going on. But we also saw some changes that were positive for those animals as well. And all of the changes that we saw seemed to kind of subside within the first month or two, that by 3 months, all those animals had actually acclimated to their new environment. If it was a stress response, it seemed to be somewhat chronic initially. It did subside. And what we would have loved to have done is taken some glucocorticoid measures to compare with the behavior. And we had attempted to do that, but we were unable to validate those measures. And it's also very expensive to do for the number of animals that we had in our studies. But we found that we did find some variables that potentially affect the individual welfare of the animals. And what was nice is that we can give this feedback to the keepers, and they can get that fairly quickly. So they got the 1 month feedback, the 3 month feedback, the 5 month feedback, and they were able to make some changes to the husbandry and the management of the animals during that time. They loved having graphs, didn't care so much about the statistics, but having a graphical picture of what was going on with those animals was very helpful for them. And we found that using these multiple pet measures really did work for a variety of species. So we think that there is a broader application for this type of study. Thank you.